session number 10601, rule 16.
Tell me what movements you then followed following the battles that you've just described.
Well, after the Kahima battles, we went back to Dimapur for rest.
And what happened at Dimapur?
Well, just lay about, really. They brought the mobile cinema in, into this area where you had the sheds, the mobile cinema, but they showed an Indian film with an Indian dialogue. And that's what all the entertainment we got. Of course, that's all we wanted. Most of the lads just wanted to relax, you know.
What would you say morale was like?
Well, it's difficult to say. Individually, I suppose, a lot of the men would be depressed and to think they'd lost a lot of their friends, been killed. But on a whole, the battalion, the morale was good, I would say, good. Each man would have his own individual feelings, I suppose, as I had. But you see, I hadn't lost any friends, any mates, as such.
Did you come across any cases of battle fatigue at this time?
Oh, yes. You had battle fatigue insofar as the carrier platoon was concerned. We found that they were getting very careless. Of course, they were driving all day long under hardest conditions, heat. And we had a few accidents with carriers coming back to Dimapur. And that's all it was, fatigue.
Well, what sort of accidents? Did they just go off the road or...?
Over the side. Two carriers went over the side.
Down the cliff?
Down the cliff. Luckily, one lodged. And the men got out all right. But the others didn't. And that was put down to battle fatigue.
Did any men crack up at all under the...
Yes. We had two men cracked up. One which I witnessed.
Can you tell me about that?
This was the medical officer. Captain Harvard Jones. Welshman, no doubt. Only a young lad. Middle 20s. I was going up the hill with a fatigue party, carrying water.
This was during the Battle of Kahima?
Yes, during the Battle of Kahima. And I was spoken to by a colonel, full colonel, red tabs, from the medical corps. And he asked me where our regimental aid post was. I said, come on, I'm going up there, I'll show you. And behold, as we're going up, who should be coming down but the medical officer himself, Captain Harvard Jones. He had his equipment on, slung wide open, and he's a complete daze. He didn't know where he was. And this colonel pulled out his revolver, threatened him. He says, get back. And he went back. And that's all was said or done about it. No disrespect to him, because he's a fine fella. As a matter of fact, he ended up with a Harley Street specialist. I was talking to him last year. He's a staunch supporter of the association. At the present moment, he's out in Germany. He's in charge of all army medical personnel in Germany. And he must be getting on to 70, because I'm 68.
But there was no medical treatment given to him. He was just...
I don't know. He just took him back and he stayed there. But that was a pure and simple battle fatigue. Now then, some people call it cowardice. Now, I don't believe there's such a thing as cowardice. A man just cracks up and that's it. To be a coward, you've got to be braver than the bravest to be a coward. Now, the other one was Sergeant Major Turnbull. He was actually sent back to Beeshlong and his was brought in as cowardice. But while he's sent back to Beeshlon, the evidence against him was destroyed in the Battle of Kehima. I've never met him since, but my mate's met him, Martin McLean's met him, and he never associates with anybody. But to make matters worse, Sergeant Major Turnbull, he was a bulliest of the bully on the parade ground. But in action, he didn't prove himself at all. And that's only two cases I know. As I say, I witnessed one, but the other one didn't witness. So I saw him when he was back at Beeshlon, disarmed, under escort, or open arrest, as we call it.
As a provost sergeant, did you have any problems to deal with at this time with men?
No, none whatsoever. I'll tell you what I did find. After the Battle of Kehima, I held a bigger respect for the rank and file, and in return, they held a bigger respect for me. I noticed that. And that was because, I think, when those men went on the Battle of Kehima, they were just boys. But when they came off, they were men. That's just my assumption of it.
What do you mean by that phrase?
Well, for instance, my attitude towards the men were, do this, do that. Everything had to be perfect, you know. And you shout and bawl at them without getting a second thought. You see? But after Kehima, my attitude changed. I was less militant. I'd mellowed. And this was created through the Battle of Kehima. Now, in return, whereas these men would have shot me, as I said before, Provost Sergeant always gets shot in the back, they had a big respect for me. Insofar as, I'll give you an example. We had a bloke there called Freddie Lister. At this present moment, he's head groom for the Duke of Northumberland. At the moment. He's worked for the groom all his life. Now, he comes to the reunions very often. And he said, Cotier said he wanted to be on the hill fighting with the men. And Captain Clegg chased him back, said no. But Cotier wouldn't go back. Well, that wasn't true. I didn't ask to fight with the men. I just wanted to support, try and make good of the losses. And I felt a bit guilty being back at Beeshlon, because I knew that when this battle was over, I'd have to start and enforce discipline, and I want to be able to say, well, I was in the battle as well. Another bloke said, Cotier proved himself as a soldier. And there's quite other little things, you know. So I get from them things, and not only that attitude the men towards me, from Kehima onwards to Rangoon, they seemed to respond not with fear, as they did previously. You know, very good sergeant, yes sergeant, you know. They said, okay, you know, they seemed to treat me as an equal, because I was treating them now as an equal, because in my opinion, they had proved themselves.
Earlier on in the interview, you talked about your views of the officers, and you said that the officers you felt weren't very good. Uh-huh. Had that
changed? Oh, yes. That had changed 100%. Had we had these officers, the officers we had at Kehima in Burma, had we had them in France and Belgium and Dunkirk, being a different kettle of fish altogether. I had a great respect for these officers, because none of these officers were Sandhurst officers, except Colonel Theobald. He was a Sandhurst officer. But the rest was all up to officers, emergency commissions, come up from the ranks, you know. A different type of officer altogether. They brew tea with the men, but they still command respect. There's no first Christian name terms with the officers and men, but they share a joke with them, and saw the funny side of things, and mixed in generally, digging in, what have you. They shared the rations, or a different attitude altogether towards officers and men. And it didn't affect the discipline. Didn't affect the discipline. The discipline was still maintained.
Okay. You were in rest for three or four days?
3 or 4 days at Dimapur.
And then what did you do from there?
From there, went up to Anadura Spur and lay up there because there were still pockets of Japs in the vicinity.
Was that near Kohima?
Aye, just on the outskirts of Kohima, actually. We lay up there, the whole battalion scattered about. And I remember, bah, it was nasty weather, monsoon weather. Whooped our knees in slush and surrey.
Did you have your bike with you?
Any what?
Did you have your motorbike with you there?
At that point, yes.
Uh-huh. Was it possible to use it?
Oh, yes, on the road. But once you left the road, you were on foot. Of course, the battalion was just a matter of yards over here. I didn't have any riding to do other than on the road. Of course, the road just comes as slurry and with the vehicles and the sluddy sliding down. Sometimes we're getting landslides and bulldozers had to come and shift them to get the vehicles through. And of course, by this time, the advance was heating up. The Jap was on the run. They wanted to get him out of Infal. And of course, Grosvenor was slinging in his armour now, his tanks. And of course, you've got another road, winding road, and that was our problem now, traffic congestion. We couldn't arrange a two-way system. We had to arrange a one-way system with the radio control.
Were you on traffic control at this
point? Yes. We used the signal platoon, because by this time we're getting new wireless sets, and we used the signal platoon to help us to control the traffic.
How did that work? Do you mean traffic lights, a traffic light system? Or
like a traffic light system, which was done with the radio.
Right.
You see, the chap at the bottom would hold the traffic in the same way as they do here when they're repairing the roads. But only difference was done by radio. Then let them through. But you've got a lot of controversy. You've got staff officers come tearing up over roads. Oh, I've got to get through. And as he was coming up, you'd sent your lot down. You always got the odd one being awkward.
But how did you sort that out?
Well, one had to reverse until it was a sign. Because where we had landslides, the bulldozers had pushed that earth over the side, which meant like a parking bay. And that's the only chance you had to use them. But they were sogging down, you see, they were with the monsoon rains, even though it was a siding. You only got the first vehicle in, and they were more or less bogged down.
This wasn't a metalled road, was it?
Yes, it was a metalled road, but just more or less vehicle width.
Did it stand up to the pressure of traffic?
Pretty well, yes. Mm-hmm. One or two bumps in here and there where the mortar bombs had dropped.
I said, and you were still based at B Echelon, or were you now in battalion headquarters?
I was still at B Echelon when we were on Dura Spur. I was still running a ferry system and on traffic in general, helping out where I could.
And how long did you stay there for?
Oh, about a fortnight or 3 weeks. Because we were waiting for the road to be opened in Fal. And eventually it was opened. Then when the road was opened in Fal, we went through as a mobile column across the Chinwin Bridge.
Was that a new bridge or was it?
Yes, that was the biggest Bailey Bridge ever built. Biggest Bailey Bridge ever built. It was nearly a mile across. Marvellous affair, Bailey Bridge.
The river was in spate, presumably, because of the monsoon as well.
Very fast. Not only that, they were getting harassed by Zero, the Royal Engineers. When they were building, they were getting harassed by Zeros. That's the equivalent to a hurricane fighters. But those areas did a marvellous job.
And you crossed the Chinwin with the battalion?
Yes. And at this stage, we'd given up our motorbikes again. Because I crossed the Chinwin on foot. I remember we crossed in the darkness, the thump, thump, thump. I thought, Christ, the Japanese hailers was a mile away. A bridge nearly a mile long, and a whole battalion crossing. And that's how I remember. It was dark, and I marched over it. And we had dispensed with our motorbikes. I don't know for what reason. And that's the last time I ever saw my motorbike, just before we crossed the Chinwin.
And what did you do then, following crossing the Chinwin?
Just kept in touch with battalion headquarters all the time. You know, dog's buddy sort of thing. Doing escort sometimes to the colonel when he's going out business company. He would take me with him as his bodyguard.
And all the time the battalion...
Of course, the battalion had changed hands by this time, you see, the colonels. Because I served under 9 colonels.
So who was in control?
When we crossed the Chinwin, it'd be Colonel Southey. Because Colonel Theobald at Kohima was promoted to brigadier. And he was killed shortly after. And in his place, we got a Colonel Brown at Kohima for the Royal Berks. And he was killed at Kohima. Then we got a Colonel Robinson. He was a bit old on the old side, and he was placed by Colonel Southey. Then after Colonel Southey, we got Colonel Waterhouse, who was one of our regular officers as a young lieutenant. He got the military cross at Kohima, and he's now Lieutenant Colonel Commander Battalion. And he was the last colonel we had. He finished up at Rangoon with us. Colonel Waterhouse.
Did this changing of colonels have any effect, do you think, in terms of
no.
consistency? Of
no, because we were badly shocked when Colonel Brown, even when Colonel Brown was killed. See, because we had Colonel Theobald, who was promoted to brigadier, so we'd lost him in any case. And when he was killed as a brigadier at Kohima. Then when Colonel Brown was killed at Kohima, it wasn't a sort of a loss in the sense of morale, because he hadn't been with us very long. Then we got Colonel Robinson, who the men didn't know him. It was just us chaps on Britannica, of course, who really were in touch with him and knew him. Even the company commanders didn't know him. He was a bit too old. Then he was recruited by Colonel Southey. I don't know what happened to Colonel Southey, whether he was killed or... Because he was getting on in the age and all. But he's replaced by Colonel Waterhouse, who was second command major of the battalion. Now, Colonel Waterhouse had come to us as a young Octo lieutenant in England.
So he was well known.
One Pipper. And so he was well known, well liked. We used to call him Tank. He's a fat bloke. And he wanted like a tank Waterhouse. And he got the military cross at Kohima. He's well liked, very popular.
Okay, so you were attached to Battalion HQ. And was the battalion constantly moving forward?
Wanted to move all the time. Either marching or getting ferried short distances. And skirmishing. No big heavy actions, really. We're still getting a few casualties. I remember... Captain Corner was killed on one of the skirmishes. But the casualties was very light after Kohima.
Were you still in the jungle at this time?
Well, it varied. We'd left Imphal and were on the open plains. And we more or less speeded across the plains. You know, one day we're in vehicles, the next day we're getting out and marching, and because the Jap was in full retreat now, heading for Mandalay. And as I say, we didn't spend much time on the plains because it was all rush and go, rush and go. As a matter of fact, we're going that fast I remember Sergeant Waters, who was the pioneer sergeant, complained to Colonel Waterhouse about pushing the men too far. Now, that's something any sergeant would never have done to any other colonel. Even court-martialed for making that remark. And I was there with Sergeant Waterhouse of the Pioneer Platoon told Colonel Waterhouse, he says, "We're sick and fed up, sir. We're getting pushed too far because you were marching, riding, nighttime you were standing too." But of course, then were his orders to keep on the heels of the Jap. And of course, Colonel Waterhouse replied, "Well, we're expecting a rest shortly." Well, we did get a rest. When we just got outside the Mandalay, we got a rest then. And the battalion sort of got pulled together again. Then when we heard that Mandalay had fallen, that was another relief, because we thought Mandalay would be tough nut to crack, because it was surrounded by a 4-foot-thick wall, Fort Dufferin, and all the Japs would be in there. And we weren't looking forward to that at all. We were used to jungle fighting, not open warfare, but we were relieved of that.
So you got near Mandalay and actually went into rest at that
time.
The
rest.
How long were you in rest for?
Oh, 3 or 4 weeks.
What time of year are we talking about now?
Well, let's see. It must be getting under 45, early 45. Early 45, because it didn't take us long to get to Rangoon. And that's when war finished. Must be getting early 45. I wouldn't know the dates exactly. I often regret, you know, not keeping a diary. Of course, you weren't allowed to, but lots of fellas did keep diaries, and lots of fellas can still produce them, the dates.
Can you remember what you did at Mandalay?
Just laid around. It was a lovely place. There was monks there, lovely Canadian village, and there were some nuns there, and there was one from South Shields. One of the nuns was from South Shields. And it was lovely, cool, I remember, clean. It was swept, the whole village was swept clean. A lot of overhanging trees. And the breeze coming through. And the accommodation was made of teak rather than bamboo of India. It was teak, solid. It had a lovely smell on stilts, like bungalow fashion. Solid teak. And we just had sing songs around a sort of a campfire.
What was, this is a really a remarkable journey, isn't it? Because you're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles through the jungle, mm-hmm. and then ending up there. What were the conditions of the men like by this time?
Oh, they were worn out. But as I've often said now to all my colleagues, I don't know how in the hell we went through it, our constitution, how it lasted. We can't understand it. Mentally, physically, we can't understand how we survived. Because no doubt we're getting reasonable food, bully beef and biscuits, which was nutritious, and fish. But apart from that, we're going more or less 24 hours a day. Sleep was a big factor. But I mean, a couple of hours sleep to us then was like a good night's sleep now. And we are astonished how we survived, physically and mentally.
Have you lost weight, do you think?
Oh, yes. I was down to 9 stone from 13 when I went out. Because when I came home, my wife and father didn't recognise me. I passed my brother in the street. He didn't recognise me when I came home. And my wife only recognised me because at the central station, I was the only one left. And I had a bush hat on.
What do you put this loss of weight down to? Is it just not enough food or...?
Just fatigue, exercise, loss of sleep, loss of food.
What about illness? Do you think that had a lot of effect on the men?
Well, I only had malaria. I had it 13 times, like, but malaria is a thing easily overcome. Physically and mentally, it's not like any other thing.
Yes, did you get any recurrence of it on this particular campaign?
No, never. First time I got when I came home. I've been home 2 or 3 days.
Okay, so following Mandalay, what happened then?
Then again, just skirmishes. taking up positions, clean canal bridges. You know, it was nothing much. It was just slog, slog, slog.
And where did you end up at?
Rangoon.
How did you get to Rangoon? Did you go back to India first?
No. We were planning for an invasion of Rangoon. And just prior to getting to Rangoon, we boarded this ship. It wasn't a very big ship. I forget the name of it now. Dilwara. That was the name of it. With the intent of invading Rangoon. Now, this is something we didn't like. Because knowing that we'd pushed all these Japs back, we'd pushed them somewhere, and we thought they'd be heavily concentrated in Rangoon.
Where did you board the Dilwara?
I don't remember the name of the place. I don't remember the name of the place.
Anyway, you were saying that you weren't looking forward to going to Rangoon.
No, because of the heavy concentration of Japanese troops. Because we thought that would make his last stand. And all the troops that we chased back would be consolidated. And we knew that the Gurkhas was going to make an airdrop in advance of us. And of course, as we steamed up the estuary and neared Rangoon, we got the signal that Rangoon had fallen. And by God, what a relief. So in actual fact, we just walked on the gangplank.
And we went. What sort of reception was there?
Oh, very, no reception. Again, Rangoon being evacuated by the Japanese. There was no resistance whatsoever. The civil population had fled into the hills. And
so it was deserted, really?
There was devastation in the stations. Tramways were smashed. That had been caused by our bombers. I didn't think our bombs was getting that far. But carriages was overturned in the railway station. Steam engines smashed up. And the only thing standing was the Pagoda Hotel. Pagoda. Shwedagon Pagoda. That was only, which has come to our cathedral. That was the only thing left standing, really. A lot of dead bodies, native bodies, lying about. Very few Jap dead. Just the odd one.
Were you one of the first sets of troops to arrive in Rangoon?
The battalion was the first. But I wasn't one of the first troops. I didn't... Didn't go in. We followed the second company in.
And what role did the battalion play?
We marched through Rangoon in a sort of a defensive formation. Not here comes the hero attitude. We took a very cautious view of it because he didn't know where these Japs were going to be hiding in buildings or what. We didn't know that they'd scattered completely. So we went in very cautiously, in tactical formation. And we ended up at a place called Insin, just outside of Rangoon.
And is that where you camped down?
And we stopped there for one night. Then we moved on to Jacob Barracks. Now, these were peacetime barracks, been occupied by the Japanese. But there had been British Army barracks. Brick. Proper military barracks. And that's where we moved to. Now, fighting was still in existence when we moved into Rangoon.
Yes, as you were marching through the streets, did you come across any fighting?
No.
Shots at you?
But the war hadn't finished as such then. There was still fighting going on ahead of us, a place called Prome. But we only sent one company up to Prome. One company. Because there's supposed to be a concentration of Japs there. But the battalion didn't go up. The battalion stopped at Rangoon. And we just settled down. That's where the war finished.
Can you remember the day that the war did finish, VJ Day?
Yes, I remember it. By this time, I'd been promoted to Company Sergeant Major. And my company commander was Major Shuttle, C Company. McLean's old company. And we're in the office working out some schedules because we were supposed to go down to Rangoon Docks and garrison the docks. And there's myself, Midget Shuttle, and the company clerk, an Irish lad called Rahilly. When we heard these fireworks going off, and when we went to investigate, it was an Indian battalion just across the field from where we were, and they were setting very lights up. Then we made inquiries what it was all about, and did you not know? The war's finished. Ended.
What did you feel at that point?
Well, at that point, disbelief, really, because, I mean, why did the Indians get this information before the British got it, sort of thing? Had somebody... Was another one of the fifth column